And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things. We're going to be catching up on the news, and our deep dive segment is going to be called AI in You. And that is actually going to be a rather long deep dive segment because this is an absolutely exploding industry, and so many people have heard about it but don't necessarily know what's going on about it or what it is or what innovations are coming and threats. And so we're going to talk about all of that this week. And as always, we're going to start with the news. In smart tech news, if you have something like an Amazon Echo, aka Alexa, or a Google Home, or you're using Siri on your iPhone or your other Apple products, you now may be able to start banking with this. Now, U.S. Bank, who is a major bank in the United States, has basically rolled this out so that you can actually do online banking through your smart device. And right now it's limited, so you can log in, check balances, and a whole bunch of other stuff, but you cannot send money through this. And they're also giving you a unique PIN. So you have a regular PIN number for your bank account, and they're giving you a secondary PIN specifically for the smart device to try to protect this. However, this also, you know, is kind of susceptible to hackers. So one, your voice is obviously being recorded and sent through whatever device you're using, whether it's Siri or Google Home or Amazon Echo. And that means that one of those companies, Google, Amazon, or Apple, might have access to your voice saying, you know, here's my bank account number, move this, here's my PIN number, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that may be a serious problem. On top of it, I've also, when I've done daily videos, I did a daily video, I want to say at least a few weeks back, or maybe a month or two back, of developers for apps for the Amazon Alexa. They could code the point that the microphone wouldn't shut off when you're done using the app. So you can download, like, you know, a history quiz or, you know, some other thing to interact with your smart device. And then as soon as you're done with it, the programming in the thing can leave it open so that it's actually recording your voice and then send it back. And I actually put out a video demonstration of that, you know, from the researchers that initially discovered that as well. So we may be seeing the future of banking through, you know, talking to these devices, but it leaves a whole bunch of cybersecurity and privacy concerns open. And, you know, that is what it is. So, you know, let me know if you would actually bank through a smartphone, because a smart device rather. I don't necessarily know if I would at this point or even in the future. I mean, convenience aside, there's just a lot of holes, a lot of gaps in that privacy, in that security with those devices right now. And in privacy and surveillance news, China has really been stepping up the game lately. In a past deep dive, I actually spoke on China pretty extensively on their surveillance, but we've actually had some new technology come out since that, and I want to bring you guys an update on that. Now, China has developed drone technology to basically spy on populations, but these drones are small drones, and they are shaped and act like birds in the air, and they can flock them together to blanket an area. So if you're looking up in the sky, what might look like a dove or a pigeon or, you know, whatever it is, could actually be a surveillance drone that is recording you and everything else in the area, you know, for government purposes. And obviously China is an authoritarian regime that has been really stepping up their surveillance, and there have been some very fascinating cases that have come out of China. So, for example, they were able to pick out one of their top 10 criminals in a crowd of 60,000 at a concert. You know, their video surveillance is so accurate. Even in a crowd of 60,000, they're able to read lips on virtually everybody there, so they can lip read through this, you know, with advanced AI and analytics. But now they're stepping this up with drone technology, basically turning what looks like birds in the sky into drones. And so we'll see where that goes. We'll see who else adopts that kind of technology. Could be governments, could be other types of organizations, but you know, I mean, look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's surveillance, you know, so I'll keep you informed onto that. But that is absolutely fascinating and a little bit terrifying to where we're going. And we're always running the balance between the control the government wants to have on its population for what it perceives as security and safety versus our ability to do what we want as, you know, free individuals. So this is potentially where our future is heading. And in Google development news, it was recently found out that literally thousands of people from hundreds of different developers that Google has allowed into their ecosystem to create third-party plugins for Gmail, that is the email service, can actually go in and read your email. And that's a serious, serious issue. I mean, we already know that Google is scanning every email that we send and receive to improve marketing and analytics. Internal to Google's network, there was also a case years ago of a 27-year-old Google engineer that was stalking a 15-year-old girl on Gmail and simply would just go into her Gmail box and, you know, and read her emails and see her pictures and insert things into her Gmail box as well. And so we know Google's had that kind of access on the back end, but now they've allowed third-party developers. And in one case, one of the developers that I don't want to say necessarily whistle blew, but you know, is talking about this, they said that a few years ago, they allowed their employees to read 8,000 unredacted emails from users' Gmail boxes, across the globe. And they have access to millions of Gmail boxes, not to mention the fact that this one company out of hundreds is literally scanning automatically 100 million unredacted emails a day to improve their marketing and analytics. And Google is letting them in. So if you have a Gmail box, it is very possible that thousands of people have potential access to this, especially if you're using third party. So you cannot assume privacy when you're using Google products, especially Gmail. And we don't know all of the companies that are doing this. I don't think there's an official list out there, not to mention other Google products that you may be interacting with that Google has given permission to outside people to do. Now, this comes from a bombshell report by the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal also states that Google's not really policing this. While they have like policies in place, they're not really enforcing it, looking into it, whatever. If you are an accepted third-party developer, you and all of your employees can basically do what you want, short of like gross violation. So it's kind of a free-for-all once you're in their system, and that's a serious, serious issue that we have. I mean, and we're talking about privacy for the most part in this episode, and it's actually kind of unconscionable. So keep that in mind when you're using Gmail. And if you want a email service that isn't going to scan you, that is free, that is going to do all of that, I would highly suggest looking at Proton Mail. That's Proton Mail. It is encrypted. It is very secure. It is actually a Swiss-based company, and they offer a free and paid version of their mailbox. But that won't track you, and that will keep your data totally secure compared to something like a Gmail, Proton Mail. So again, Gmail users, I know it's hard to switch emails, especially when you've had one for years. So if you're going to keep your Gmail account, and I actually do have one because I carry an Android and I do nothing with that Gmail account. But you know, if I have to sign up for stupid stuff, that's when I use the Gmail account. I do no personal correspondence, you know, through anything that I don't control. So it's kind of, I need it because of my Android phone, but if you're using it for personal correspondence, take heed, because your recipient and possibly thousands of people could be reading that email. And in smart tech news, we're talking about smart TVs. Now, a lot of you have smart TVs. These are the TVs that have integrated wireless access, and they give you automatic access to things like Hulu or Netflix, Amazon Prime, that kind of stuff. Sometimes they have video cameras and microphones in there. And what a lot of people don't really realize is that these televisions are actually collecting a huge amount of data on us on a regular basis, and that's a serious issue. And so there's an organization, a company out there called Samba TV, and they've got some serious investors. I think they've got something like $30, $40 million worth of capital from people like Mark Cuban and other investors. And what they do is they have agreements with companies like, you know, Samsung, LG, Philips, etc., to integrate their technology into the smart TV, so that when you are flipping on Netflix and watching something, or whatever you're doing with your smart TV, they're actually collecting that data and analytics and sending it to a third-party firm for more advanced marketing. So they know that when your user is attached to your smart TV and you're watching whatever on Netflix, they may hone that ability to advertise it as they collect data on your viewing habits, you know, and other interactions you have with the smart TV. And this just continues to underscore the problem that we have with being unaware of privacy. And you're technically supposed to opt in, but according to statistics, over 90% of people are just opted in, probably automatically, to something like Samba TV. You don't necessarily know it's running. It's not like it's like a public option on your smart TV, like a Netflix or a Hulu. It's simply there. So if you have a smart TV, you may want to go check the settings, see if you notice anything with Samba TV, and then opt out or disable that, or simply not use a smart TV. You can buy high definition televisions without the smart features built in and then add them yourself, like a game console that has all that stuff, or a DVD player that might have all that as well, and make sure that it obviously is not doing that. But make sure you opt out, because your smart TV is literally tracking everything you're doing and it's sending it to a third party. And that's not fun for anybody. I don't think anybody's a big fan of that, probably except for Mark Cuban, who's probably making a ton of money doing that. So that is your smart TV news of the day. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in social media news, and most of you have social media accounts, I think most of the United States population has a Facebook account, given that there are something like 3 billion plus Facebook users on the globe. Basically, if you've ever taken a quiz like, which Disney princess are you, or, you know, what car would you be, you know, all these stupid quizzes that we see, and I use that term because it's just, you know, they're minor, like little fluff quizzes, you know, but you're interested and you take them. One of the biggest providers of that is actually a company called Social Sweethearts, and they have a company, or rather they have a website called nametests.com, and that's where a lot of these quizzes come from that you take. And the problem with this is that recently a cybersecurity researcher found that as you are taking these tests and quizzes, you're kind of opting in to data collection. And even if you divorce yourself from the site, meaning you unauthorize your account from using it, they still have access. And there is they ended up, NameTest or Social Sweethearts actually ended up having a serious data leak that exposed around 120 million people, mostly in the United States, to these problems. So the researcher could go in, pull up the data of his live test of, you know, which Disney princess are you, or whatever he was doing. And what the site was getting was all of his information as culled from Facebook, because, again, we've talked about Facebook and data privacy before, not to mention the fact that he saw his pictures and a whole bunch of other stuff there. So he deauthorized the account, went back and looked for himself in there, and he was still able to see a lot of very personal identifiable information on his account, enough to run like an identity theft scam on him. Now, this leak is available for literally 120 million people. You can go in, or rather a hacker or a researcher can go in and literally just pull people up through this. Now, Facebook cut off access to Social Sweethearts, aka NameTests, until they fix this issue. And they may have fixed it at this point, but this underscores the problem that, one, if we are taking these, you know, these tests, these quizzes, we are looking at these websites, we may be opting in or giving them third-party access very deeply into our social media accounts, even if they're marked private. And if we are deauthorizing them or uninstalling them or opting out at some point, the data is still collected. The data is still there. And a lot of times when these things are developed, as in the case of nametest.com and Social Sweethearts, they don't put good cybersecurity into place, and now we've got 120 million people taking stupid quizzes that have personally identifiable information out there. That is a serious, massive data breach, and it's rather tough. Not to mention the fact, on top of this, if I'm really thinking this through, is if we are taking these tests, we are possibly giving information that might be used against us to this. So a lot of these tests or quizzes could be things like security questions for a bank. What was your first car? What was your first pet's name? Where did you meet your spouse? All this kind of stuff. And so we really want to limit that scope, you know, of who we let in, of the quizzes that we take and all that kind of stuff. And if you have social media, just be aware that, you know, this quiz you might be taking might give you, you know, 2 minutes of interest, but at what expense, at what cost, at what damning information can somebody get on you because you decided to figure out which Disney princess you are or which car best suits you, or, you know, take your pick. So just keep that in mind and heads up out there when it comes to social media and quizzes online. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive is on AI, or artificial intelligence, and machine learning. And I know all of you guys have heard, you know, buzzwords about AI and machine learning and what it can do for us, but a lot of people don't necessarily know what it is and how we use it. And there is a lot of very interesting and sometimes practical and very impractical applications for this that essentially can transform the world. But as we are working with AI, machine learning, artificial intelligence, whatever you want to call it, we have to realize that with all the good and the innovation, as always, there can be some bad. And so to begin, a lot of people don't necessarily realize what the basics of artificial intelligence, or AI, is. And the definition is actually pretty simple. The basic definition is simply that AI is the theory and development of computer systems able to perform tasks that normally require human intelligence, such as visual perception, speech recognition, decision making, and translation between languages. That's it. That's all it really is. And obviously there's a lot of different teams and a lot of different companies developing different methods for AI and how to apply this. But at its core, this is all that AI is doing. And what a lot of people don't realize is that AI has actually been around, at least the concept of it, has been around well before the modern computing era. When I say modern computing era, I'm talking probably 80s and 90s or so, when personal computers became the rage, and then moving obviously into the mobile revolution with smartphones and all of that. But when we were looking at the foundation of AI, we're actually going back to 1950. Now, there was a British computer scientist, a brilliant British computer scientist, and actually one of my personal nerd heroes as well, named Alan Turing. And he devised something called the Turing test. And if you're not familiar with the Turing test, it basically states that as we start to grow smart computers, learning machines that interact with humans, basically what ends up happening is that the machines at some point are going to be so good at interacting with humans, understand us and our nuance so well, that they're going to be able to fool us. And if an artificial intelligence passes the Turing test, that is a significant, significant marker in the development of artificial intelligence. And we've had several artificial intelligence during Turing tests that have come close. And usually it revolves, the judges talking to an AI, and half of the machines, or rather half of the people they're talking to, or half of what they're talking to, are actual humans, and the other half are artificial intelligence. And the judges are actually able to ask it questions, to probe, to see if it can fool it, all that kind of stuff. And, so there have been some that have come really close to actually passing this. We are progressing, you know, very, very fast. Now, some other interesting basic facts of AI is that AI now is pretty much in a lot of our homes. So Google Home, Siri, Cortana by Microsoft, Amazon Echo, aka Alexa, these are all based on artificial intelligence and machine learning. They're self-updating machines that are designed to talk and interact, as well as search for information on you. This is the foundation of AI, and they're all female voices. And the reason why they're all female voices is because studies have shown that when it comes to men and women, listening or interacting with devices, that overwhelmingly both men and women prefer female voices. And so there are very few, the only thing I can think of in terms of AI being male sounding is one of the Terminator movies, but the actual practical applications from AI are all female voices, you know, that we hear. And that is actually by design, due to you know, studies on humans. And another interesting thing as we are looking at foundational facts is that AI, while it has the ability to, you know, to interact with us and to learn, it also has the ability to self-repair. Now, a study was done on a self-repairing robot in 2015, and researchers created this robot with artificial intelligence that they designed, and this robot had six legs. Now, they could remove parts of the robot. So they would remove, let's say, two legs, and they could go up to two legs with this. The robot would understand that it was working on degraded performance, perform a series of diagnostics and self-checks on itself, you know, to find out what was going on. It would determine which legs of it was gone. And then from there, it could move to a bin that had basically replacement parts and then install a new set of legs, turning it back into optimal performance. And so what this means is that we have robots, whether it's for manufacturing or helping or whatever, that are going to understand when they are damaged or ill-performing and then seek to fix themselves in any way that they can. And we don't know how far this goes, because obviously, you know, it will the programming become self-correcting at some point and all of this. But all of these things are right now the foundation of what artificial intelligence is. And from there, we can look at several different new innovations at that are coming out, that are being developed, that ideally would make our lives easier, although sometimes a little scary. And as I dive into this, I think you guys are going to find this really interesting, because some of the new stuff that's coming out is there really to help us. I mean, that's why AI is developed, but there are some detractors, and we're going to dive right in. And the first innovation we're going to talk about is really interesting. So the first one is going to be talking about our mobile phones and our devices and how we actually secure them. Now, we know that we have a password that we use to unlock our phone, or sometimes a PIN number. Sometimes we have it attached to like a fingerprint or something like that. But a lot of times hackers have a very easy time bypassing this information, or if they're able to steal it from you, then what ends up happening is that they are able to just simply get into your device or your computer and all of that. And so researchers are using artificial intelligence to learn your personal characteristics and then apply that to security. And so, perfect example, you know, if you have a password, a username and password, and I steal that password, I'm going to know your password and I'm going to be able to log in. But what if I type faster than you? Or what if I type slower than you? Or what if the pressure I put on the keyboard is significantly greater or less than what you do? I pound on the keyboard, or I'm very light when you pound on the keyboard. AI is going to know that. And so it's going to understand that if you're at the keyboard pounding away at the speed that you type, let's say 60 words a minute, and I come there and I'm a light touch at 100 words a minute, it's going to say, wait a second, I'm not going to let you in, because your normal characteristics based on study, based on the understanding of you using your keyboard 8 hours a day, it knows that it's not actually you and will prevent you from getting in. And conversely, on the mobile side of this, your mobile device, like your smartphone, is actually a sea of sensors. This thing has cameras and mics and basically like electronic gyroscopes and GPS and all this kind of stuff. And so it understands when you're typing, if you're using your right hand, your left hand, how much pressure you're putting on the screen on this, you know, and all of that. And so let's say you're left-handed and you're using a specific keyboard called, you know, swipe, and you're putting a good deal of pressure as you're using swipe in this. If I steal your phone and I'm right-handed and I have your password, it's going to understand that I'm tilting the phone differently. I'm using my right hand. I'm putting a different amount of pressure on this, or a different finger, you know, because obviously like my thumb is wider than my index finger. And so maybe you use your index finger and I use my thumb, that kind of thing. And it's not going to let it in. Now, we can also tie this to secondary degrees of authentication. So while it understands all of this plus your password, it might also, you know, require you to have your finger, you know, like a fingerprint or facial recognition. And so now we've got multiple avenues to verify that you are who you say you are, as opposed to just a username and password that somebody can steal. It is very hard to steal your characteristics. And so that is coming, that is currently being developed. And another thing that is really being innovating right now is encryption. Now, encryption is that which secures all of our data, and a lot of companies are working on advanced AI encryption. So we're going to be talking about Google. Now, Google has developed three artificial intelligence computers, Bob, Alice, and Eve. And I believe I've mentioned them before in another deep dive segment. So we're going to, it'll be a brief primer here. But Bob, Alice, and Eve are designed to create encryption systems. Bob and Alice talk to each other, and Eve is supposed to eavesdrop. Get it, Eve? And so how they work is Bob and Alice will establish communication, and they will send data to each other using an encryption method. Eve cracks in and tries to listen. The goal is to have Bob and Alice develop their own unique methodology for communication that Eve cannot crack or decipher. Now, when they spun this up, Eve would eavesdrop very easily. She'd be able to break in and read what Bob and Alice were sending to each other. And over generations of Bob and Alice figuring out new and more aggressive methodologies for encryption, it became harder and harder and harder for Eve to break in. And after each successive attempt, that time would get longer, to the point now where Eve cannot break in. Eve has not been able to break into this, which is beyond fascinating. And so what we may see is an application for encryption on our devices, our phones, that will be talking to other applications in the cloud or whatever we're connecting to, that will figure out between them a unique method to encrypt the data. And so a hacker can't use a standard methodology to try to crack, let's say, an older encryption system or basically brute force attack a new encryption system, or like a more modern encryption system rather, because what or how we are using encryption between our device and wherever we're going is wholly unique. And so that makes it very difficult to crack. And that is very, very fascinating. You're listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show. We'll be back right after this quick message.